This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 807, brought to you by Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboy and enter promo code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners, just like you, washing hands, wearing masks, getting vaccinated, you're drinking your water, you're stretching. I mean, at this point, you probably have ordered Mack Weldon, is my guess. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't, you know.
Cheetah with a hat full of napalm. I'm a runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb.
Hey, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 807. I am Josh Flanagan. I am here with my co-host Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Who, as far as we know, is not guilty of any international espionage.
As far as you know, yeah.
There's no proof.
No.
Until someone can come through with clear and distinguishable proof, you're not guilty of anything.
Never been found guilty in a court of law.
That's important for everyone mm-hmm. listening here to remember.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a stack of comic books that comes out on, used to be Wednesdays, now it's Tuesdays. It's not, nothing's the same as it used to be.
Nah. This is what getting old feels like.
Yep, one of us picks the one that they like best. That's the same. That doesn't change. No. We are steady in that way. We are Gibraltar. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We will talk about the other books from the releases that came out. Apparently, I can't do this part. it took 800 times, and I was like, I've lost it. We'll have a good time. There will be mail. We will clearly point out and enunciate our foibles. That's a thing we do. That's one of our moves. That's what we're mm-hmm. about. We will have fun. It's not a promise, but it's an aspiration. There will be spoilers. That one I can pretty much promise you.
Yeah.
You know how that works. Connor, you had the pick.
I did have the pick. I had a lot of books this week, and the pick ended up being Kang the Conqueror, number 4, Jackson Lansing, Colin Kelly, Carlos Magno, Espen Grootjern.
Good. And I was like, I started to look at the script as I heard you. I was like, this can't be that bad. Then I looked at the letters. I was like, fair enough.
And Joe Caramagna, the old standby on letters.
Joey Donuts.
I don't know if this is because right now I just finished reading Avengers Forever in preparation for our book explode, but I was all about Kang this week. And, you know, this miniseries, I think the first issue was the pick of the week. The first one or the second one?
Yes,
and
yes,
then
first one.
I don't know if we've even talked about it since, but it's been a little, I think the second, third episode issues were a little, they were fine. But this one, to me, was like peak Kang. And what I mean by that is a great Kang story should be slightly confusing.
Agree.
Because
very much agree.
It's time travel. There's multiple versions of himself. He's fighting himself. Time travel, if done compellingly, is a little confusing. And what this issue here is almost a Kang overview. And I know that's what kind of the series is itself. And I know that this series is sort of introducing several Kang retcons, which, fine, it's Kang, it's time travel.
Yeah, you can, retcons for Kang don't matter.
Yeah, so here the younger Kang, who is the protagonist of this story, the one who started off the series as a child in the future, and ended up going back in time and killing himself in the 60s and becoming Kang at an earlier age, he's on a mission to find his love, Ravonna, who was from ancient Egypt, and he is now discovered living in 4086 CE. And she just does not care about him at all until they start fighting. And then it's like, well, you can fight, so let's get in on this. And so then he ends up in this sort of, that's a dimension-spanning, time-spanning adventure in which he becomes the full-on Kang that we know and love, the Kang the Conqueror. And I think this is also the issue, Josh, where even though, you know, our love of Kang is very well established and long term, this was the issue where I thought, you know what, I can see Kang as a formidable MCU bad guy.
Sure.
Like a Thanos level one. If they do it right.
Well, that's really the trick. Like that's going to be tough to get across intelligently and compellingly. That's a hard one.
Especially the Kang the Conqueror version.
Yes, you know, not Immortus, really the key.
Immortus, who we've met already on Loki, is not the one. And even the younger sort of 60s version, the badass one who is like a time travel version of Alexander the Great, who is just such a great leader and combat commander that his armies just roll over time and space. And there's this one double-page spread where he's fighting King Arthur, and then he's fighting some aliens, and then he's fighting Immortus, and then he's fighting the Skrulls and the Shi'ar. And it's just like, yeah, he's a super badass conqueror.
I think that we don't lean on the word conqueror enough when addressing him. And I think that it's actually something that I think that this series...
He's Genghis Khan.
Yeah, yeah. It's something that this series, I think, elucidated better than a lot of things in the past, because people would bring Kang in and you know, he'd be what they needed him to be for that, and it was always silly and fun. But this sort of, you know, made it into concrete love. This is what this character actually is, and why he's formidable. And it's not the time traveling omnipotence, it's the conquering.
Right. And it's funny when he shows up because he has the high flute and talk, and he has the big purple boots. But like,
they're not even thigh high boots, they're like, they're taint high. Yeah. Those boots. If those were a millimeter longer, he would get taint chafe. I mean, like, it is. Yes. Crotchless pants.
And so you have that element of that here, because he's always Kang. His personality is always bombastic and over the top. But he's also, you're like, well, this guy doesn't fuck around. You know, he has this bloodlust for conquest because he lost Ravonna. He has no love in his life. He realizes the only thing he's really good at, the thing that really makes him happy, is conquest. And he raises his army, and he just goes to town on the universe. And I thought this was incredibly compelling, incredibly fun. I love the 60s Kang mask he wears with the eye cutouts.
Mm-hmm.
It's even somehow even more unsettling.
Yeah.
And as Kang fans, as a Kang fan, I thought this was terrific. Did you like this issue too?
Yeah, I did. A couple of things I think is that I think that this issue did a really good job, like I said, of solidifying the Conqueror part, but also showing us how we got here from who the character was in the first issue. Because it was like in the first issue, look, he's a human. He's ambitious. He has, you know, issues. You know, but he was recognizable as a human. And you know, you see that it's that fate thing where you see what you're going to be and you can fight against it as much as you want, but you're still going to be that thing, which I think is very compelling. Right. And, you know, it's the hubris of the whole thing, is that he's the master of time. He can conquer anybody and do anything he wants to, but He's always going to be the thing that he is. And mm-hmm. you can't get around it. And that's you know, that's sort of one of those legacy old time stories fit into this. But I think the other thing that is really commendable, and we haven't mentioned the Carlos Manuel art.
Yeah, I was going to talk about him next. He's great.
It is perfect for what it needs to be here. It is exactly.
He's done a lot we've talked about lately.
Yeah.
I tend to be a little higher on him than you are, but he can go up and down. I think he's great for this kind of story where it's full of characters and detail and crazy action. He doesn't cheat on a page.
No. Look at the page 9 where he's standing on like a Mad Max type truck.
Yeah.
You know, as his army comes through and the crazy gadgets and guns. And it's really, it does Kirby justice for sure. Mm-hmm. I guess the last thing that I wanted to point out, I think that is almost the most important for me, is that this book threaded a needle in a way that most comic book stories and even anything else can't, in that they told an origin story and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make you feel like the character had significantly changed or had diminished. It didn't feel pointless, because a lot of the times when you take an established character who's sort of fun is how weird they are. And you know, not knowing anything about them is probably more helpful than knowing anything about it. But they stuck this.
Yep.
You know, they gave us a personal Kang story. And at the end of it, the character actually was neither stronger nor weaker. It was just like, yeah, that makes sense. That works in there. I'm glad I read that. But it did not change.
We still have one more issue left. This is the second last issue.
I didn't know that. But this could have worked as a final issue. It just it could have.
Yes.
And it really felt that way. If anything, if I won, I don't even think it's a criticism, but it made me go, huh. Apparently, Kang is named for an onomatopoeia of an engine that makes a Kang sound, not unlike Solo. And I can't tell whether I hate it because it's stupid or love it because it's stupid. But the next page, the next page where he's standing on, he's sitting on a throne of invisible energy, actually.
Yeah.
You know, as we look down from below up at his, I mean, is Kang the championship Olympic man spreader? Yeah,
yes.
He is. He's the champ of that. And we are looking right up into it. Like, we're right. Speaking of taints, you know, as we look through his army in the flames and Kang, 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 a friend of mine sent me that page. He goes, I figured out your back tattoo. Yep. That's it.
I mean, it's not wrong.
Nope.
I mean, there are things here that are, you know, well-worn story ideas. You know, it's the being rejected by his love is what sends him into full-on conquering mode, but that's fine.
But you kind of want him to have a stupid story. Like, all of the pomp and circumstances, whatever, is because he couldn't get a girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, like, it works for him. Tropes and cliches work for certain characters.
Yes.
And I think this is one.
And I said earlier, like, they can retcon Kang for now. This is a younger Kang. But, like, there's infinite Kangs. You know, it's a time travel story. Kang, a different Kang can show up and kill this guy sometime in the future. And, you know, who knows? It's just, how many Kangs are there? It's many as you need.
X. It's N plus one. K right. plus one.
So
K means something else in scientific notation, so that this, I can't use that.
Like I said, we may have talked about 2 and 3. I don't remember, honestly. But I think this and the first issue have been the strongest ones. I've been enjoying the series. I get excited when I see it come out, but this issue was the one I read where after every book came out, I kept going back and thinking about scenes from this book or pages from this book. And by the end of my reads, and there were several books I really enjoyed this week.
Yeah, it wasn't one of those winner. Weeks where, like, it wasn't, I don't know if there was an apparent, like, a clear winner, but, like, I could have picked several picks of the weeks this week.
I finished my stack, which has about 21, 22 books. And I was like, I think it's Kang, but it wasn't like it's Kang. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is not diminishing this book. It's just that there was things that I liked across a lot of books, but I kept thinking about Kang in that sense. And I kept waiting for another book to come in and blow it out of the water. And nothing did, because this book was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It was Kanglicious. And you can honestly read this issue. If you've not read any other issue from the series, you can just pick this issue up. It gives you everything you need to know about. And if you don't know much about Kang, or you're curious, Kang curious,
yeah,
just read Kang and Conqueror number 4.
Oddly enough, Kang is also bi. There's at least 3 of him.
So there you go. Kang the Conqueror number 4 from Marvel Comics is the pick of the week. I also enjoyed Dark Ages number 3 from Tom Taylor and Iban Coelho, although even though this is, how many issues is this? I don't know if this, how many issues
no
this
idea.
Is actually.
6 and or 12?
I feel like they are telling me the story.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, he does that. Like, it's a little bit like somebody telling you that already knows because it happened.
Yeah, I think it's because
the narration is in past tense. We didn't know who we were dealing with. We didn't know who we were dealing with. He was too fast. We couldn't stop it. It happened so fast.
You know, and I liked all of it. I just thinking, I feel like a little bit, if my only criticism of this book is it feels like it's an overview of a story rather than the story itself. Although I think it's possibly because it's only 6 issues as opposed to the DC one, which is 12. Mm-hmm. But I like this. I like these, you know, alternate take stories. I thought there were some good bits here. The Quicksilver bit was great. Go ahead.
Yeah, that really, in terms of like a comic book action scene using the powers and everything, and you know, every once in a while they'll focus on one of the characters that you kind of know about and think about, but you see how sort of formidable they are. And I think mm-hmm. they did that really well with Quicksilver this time. And there was a reversal on it. So there was like, we need somebody who can get in and out. We have a guy. And he goes, and you're like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then the twist is that he shows up, and then he sees Magneto, his father, is being used as sort of the battery. And then that sends him off the deep end. So he does the wrong thing. And then you see how evil Apocalypse is by using Purple Man to control him to send him back there, where he just kicks everybody's ass and he kills Okoye and he
Johnny
like
Storm
really
too.
Yeah, really quickly, you know, he just sort of dispatches with every quick, I guess is the name of the game. But that was really fun and exciting, and it went, you know, it took you up and down, and then sort of the final, he basically pierces the Human Torch and he, you know, explodes. He goes supernova or whatever. And you see that Sue Storm has saved the people in the room. And she's standing over and she's like kneeling over the ashes of her dead brother. And as a sort of contrast to the scene we just had, that page brings it right down. All the flame disappears. And you see Quicksilver sticking half out of this protective bubble.
Yeah.
And his legs are burned behind him. I was like, that is excellent right there. That is good work on the part of the artist, but also just in terms of pacing and stuff.
Yes, I wonder what his legs are in the bed scene. Do they give him prosthetic legs?
I thought that, and I went back because they look like they're actually just charred. At first, when you look at them, they look like they're all like ash.
No, it looks like they're ash. Doesn't have feet.
Yeah, but some of the darker marks give him some shape that maybe that's more, maybe. I don't know. You're not wrong. Like, they contradicted themselves, because I was like, well, how are they? Why are his legs there? So I went back and looked, and I was like, I can kind of see how he might still have legs.
And this is like prototypical Tom Taylor stuff, where there's awesome big action, and then it just, you know, really great character stuff. And then that's when the final scene where Sue finds out that Reed is helping Apocalypse, either because he's being mind controlled by Purple Man or because of his insatiable need for discovery. But either way, she's not happy about it. And you know, this is a fun alternate take story that I've been enjoying.
It's interesting because they put on an alternate optional last page where Venom shows up. But if you just
don't look at that page,
if you don't look at that, there's no problem at all. I thought it was kind of cool of them to be like, here's one thing that could happen, that, and then I was like, yeah, but it probably won't. You know, with Venom.
Gosh. Oh boy. He looks like he's a Venom Carnage hybrid.
He says the three of you.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that means.
Oh, boy. There's a couple of, I like the art, Iban Coelho, although there's occasionally panels and stuff I don't love. I think they're really inconsistent about the ages of the characters. You know, they gave Peter gray temples, but everybody else looks the same from previous to...
Well, he's stressed out.
You know, I get it. Characters can age, you know, go gray earlier than others, but like you know, they're supposed to be in the future. Let's make everybody a little bit older looking.
They put a couple of lines on Johnny Storm's face, which I thought made him look older. I thought it worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. And Luke Cage isn't going to crack for all sorts of reasons. Sue Storm, I don't know.
Sue looks like a teenager, though.
Well, that's because she's constantly using an invisible force field to smooth the lines of her face.
That would
out.
Be a great use of her power, actually.
Yeah.
Just pull my... It's a facelift. It's a constant facelift.
Yeah. It's tiring. Don't get me wrong.
But I liked this. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. And, you know, there were things in it that are those Tom Taylor magic things that I think he does better than anybody.
If it is 6 issues, I wish it was 12.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say 8.
That's fine. I just wish you just give it a little more breathing room. It feels like it's moving very quickly.
6 is not enough. You're right. I agree with that. Not all robots.
Not all robots.
Not all of them.
So we talked about issue 1. We talked about the fact that in his back page essay, Mark Russell said that this is a book about toxic masculinity. And I said I didn't see that in the first issue at all. It seemed more like a story about industrialization.
It is a book of many, many deep.
But this issue
is
definitely very much on the nose about toxic masculinity, as the robots who are the robots previously, if you're not reading this book, in the future every family has a robot that does the work. The robot brings home the money and the humans just sort of enjoy it. And the problem is the robots are kind of scary. The robots occasionally rebel and kill people, so they have the people in charge of the robots have built new human-looking robots, and those robots are displacing the old ones. The old ones are all being laid off, and there's no jobs for them.
Androids.
And they just sit home angry, building weapons, and then eventually they strike here with their tiki torches. And
and they don't. The thing is, like, the robots are also unhappy.
Right.
They're but depressed. They don't know why. They won't talk about it.
Right.
Like, they kind of hint around it with each other. Like, the metaphor becomes very clear. And there are a lot of metaphors. Like, this is book. You could take this book in 1,000 different ways. But I think what we mostly need to come out of it is that we need to figure out a way to make a Mandroid Ron shirt. Because Mandroid Ron is the greatest character to be introduced in quite some time. Because he says the line, there are fewer protesters on the streets now than any time since the asphyxiation of Orlando. You could say that they've taken the wind out of the protest. And I was like, Jesus, it's not even real. And I was, Mandroid Ron.
Well, you know that Mike Diodato Jr., the artist, is going to do his thing. So that's George Clooney. The main guy is Michael Douglas. The main woman is what's her name from Single White Female. The main dude is the other dude's Michael K. Williams.
Yeah.
So, you know, he does his thing.
Whatever. I think, you know what? At the beginning, we thought it's weird that he's on this, but I think that he was right for this in the end. I think it totally worked.
It's great robots.
It's not over. I don't mean it that way. But
No, it's not over yet. It feels like next issue is the final issue, doesn't it?
It does feel like
this feels like this is the climax?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, but to be concluded, so next issue. I forgot we're in the age of 5-issue miniseries now.
Mm-hmm.
In 10 years, it's going to be the 3-issue miniseries.
Yeah, and the issues will be. Yeah, I was going to say 16, but yours was better.
It's going to cost you $8.
Yeah, it's a fun, you know, it's Mark Russell. It's thoughtful. It's kind of funny. It's kind of terrifying. You know, I don't think he's going to run out of steam anytime soon with these kind of things because he's sort of the only guy doing it any justice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fun little niche that he picks out.
Yeah. I mean, there's some jokes and things that are like really on the nose. You're just like, oh, man, you couldn't come up with like a better one. But then there's some that are just so brilliant. So
I feel like he knows that, though. Like, it's like a dad joke. Like, he's like, I'm going to stick this here. And that helps it keep. You can't always be super clever.
Right.
It's like one of the, like, if you're constantly being super clever, you get kind of annoying. So you make yourself a little dumb, too. You put in a fart joke and then you can move along without.
I enjoy the neighbor who got a sex bot that looks like his neighbor's wife, but younger. Just taunts him with it.
Jennifer Jason Leigh?
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
The Amazing Spider-Man 78 Point Bay.
Which I guess is, I don't know what that means.
Short for Beyond.
I thought it was somebody's girlfriend.
No, this is the Beyond storyline happening in Spider-Man.
Is this the corporation?
Point dot things. Yeah, the corporation.
Yes, absolutely. So let's take all that out of it.
Yeah.
And every time an Amazing Spider-Man issue comes out, I'm like, I don't want to read this. But I don't want to read the Ben Reilly story.
Yeah, I don't
either. But they've actually been pretty good.
Yes.
If I put that aside, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want that to be the thing. But if they have to be, they're not bad.
Yeah. And this is Jed McKay.
Yes.
Who has been doing great, great Marvel gosh work.
So this one, it's got the Daughters of the Dragon. You've got Colleen Wing and Misty Knight on the cover. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, that's kind of interesting. And pretty quickly, it became apparent that this was their issue. Had really very little to do with Ben Reilly, who made a little appearance at the beginning.
Right.
And it was delightful.
Yes, it was.
It was delightful in every way. Eleonora Carlini, who I do not know, and Federico Blee on colors, did wonderful art. I thought at some point I was like,
yes.
Otley or something?
Yeah, it looks a little Otley-esque. Yeah, for sure.
And there's a bit where, and you know, Jed McKay is doing really spectacular dialogue throughout this whole thing. So at the beginning, they have created a training mission, like a danger room type scenario, which is haunted Avengers murder mansion. And Spider-Man goes in, and there's a Captain America chainsaw murderer, and you know, basically it's a horror movie in the Avengers mansion.
Yeah,
and it's sort of silly. And then they come up with this story that goes around where Colleen and Misty, you know, have to go fight a monster. And even that's sort of silly because they're like, they go for like an after action meeting. They're like, oh, there's one other thing we need you to do. All right, well, we'll go do the thing. And they drive down there. Is it a monster wrecking downtown Manhattan? I was like, so how long did they wait before they showed up there? And where are the rest of the Avengers? It doesn't matter. And like the monster has this crazy sci-fi cosmic power thing, and they end up inside an Avengers murder mansion because of a technical glitch, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter, but it becomes real.
Yeah.
Like, it was just...
It was fun.
It was so fun. And the art was... it was perfect for what it needed to be, and it was really energetic. I liked the characters. I liked the stuff going on around them. You know, as soon as we snap back to the Beyond stuff and the woman with the pink hair, I was like, why doesn't anyone see this? This is a supervillain. You know, But, you know, like this, I was like, give them a series.
Yeah.
And they did a trick. They didn't bring the star energy thing back to the lady. They gave it to, I'm calling her Photon. I'm going to call her that forever.
I call her Captain Marvel.
Yeah, or Monica Rambeau, but not, yeah. What is she, Spectrum? Not calling her that.
I don't know.
That's a cable
company. I don't know what her name is now.
Stupid. I expected nothing, and I just enjoyed the heck of it.
They're a great team. Colleen's, you know, the goofy one. And Misty's sort of the one who wags her finger at Colleen, but they're a great team. But
is charmed by her at the same time, not annoyed.
She's amused by her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a fun relationship, and they're good. You know, these side dot books, they're dumb, but also it allows them to branch off and tell these stories that they wouldn't tell in the main book.
And when you have, like, people on them who are, you know, skilled... And are able to have fun, and you know, like there's a page where they're using all the different gadgets they get from Beyond, and the caption describes what the thing is and gives you the skew. You know, like really let them play. Like you can get good things out of it. And yeah. I think there are, you know, I think that we malign some of what happens in comics and newer creators that we don't know, but I think the people who have showed up, there's a crop of them who are very good at sort of these kind of asides,
mm-hmm.
like stronger than I think have been in a while.
Yes.
And again, art is all over the place, but the good art that shows up from the unknowns is really good.
Yeah. Okay,
there's like an endless well
dynamic.
Of these people. Yeah. Really fun.
All right. Let's talk about Blue and Gold number 4 from Dan Jurgens and a bunch of artists we're going to talk about in a second. So, obviously, I was in the bag for this issue. This is not a surprise. But, you know, this is Booster Gold and Blue Beetle having solidified their business partnership. They're going to go into sort of the community superhero game. And so they're doing a TV interview about their new endeavor. And they start to bicker about a memory they had about when Booster first joined the Justice League. Again, none of this continuity makes any sense in the New 52, but what the fuck ever? Who cares? Buy the t-shirt.
There's a shirt for that.
So they get to bicker about a memory about when Booster first joined the team, and Booster remembers it one way and Beetle remembers it another. So they do a flashback, and the first flashback is Beetle's telling the story, and it's drawn by Kevin McGuire, which looks terrific. I still don't love how they color him, but it's much better than how they used to color him. And here, I think, I don't know who's coloring him, honestly. They didn't list a colorist for his art, but maybe he's doing it himself. And that was great. Nice little flashback to the Justice League. And then Booster tells his side of the story, and for some reason, Dan Jurgens draws it. I feel like McGuire should have drawn all the flashbacks. I get that he's slow, but if you're flashing back to a specific era of the Justice League, then have McGuire do all of it. Jurgens drew the Justice League late, much later into the run. And it just didn't make sense from a device standpoint. If you're going to do the one thing, do it properly. And then, of course, Guy Gardner shows up to set the record straight because he has a ring recording of what happened. And
so like a Rashomon kind of thing?
That was a really fun issue. And Ryan Sook drew the rest of it, which he's back.
I saw it, and I was like, I remember reading one or two of these, but I don't think that I've read this far, and so I didn't read it.
That's okay.
It might be a you thing. I will say that this week was the week that I was like, I'm done with many of these things that I was like, I read Green Lantern, and I was like, I can't keep doing this.
Oh, no, I dropped it. I dropped it this week. So I'm done.
In fact, Justice League, I was almost like, I don't think I can do this anymore either.
It was not a good issue.
And you know, like half of it, I don't want to read it all, and the other half, like I'm trying. It was a lot of that. I was like, okay, well, I can't. I don't have time for this. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. I wanted this on here. I talked to Tom King about this a little bit, but and I think Jim Viscardi and I spoke about it the last time the issue was out. But God, I love this series. I just when a new issue comes out, I get really excited because it is totally out of Tom King's sort of normal oeuvre.
Yeah.
And I just, it's beautiful. Like every issue, Bill Kosseverly.
Oh, beautiful.
I mean, just doing career work stands out. And you just got this really interesting little story with these characters. And basically, this story is about Supergirl getting tricked into going to a planet that was constructed specifically to trap Superman.
Yeah.
And I just thought, God, that's brilliant. Like, what a with a cool device. Sun. Yep.
How they spend. Do that doesn't matter.
No, totally doesn't matter. But, it, you know, like, the sun makes them, you know, get some sick like kryptonite. And in the meantime, so then when that's happening, there's scary dinosaurs everywhere. Now, why they let it so the sun could go down and you could get away? Who knows? Don't care. Batman 66.
It allowed the girl who has been the sidekick, true grit little girl character, to have to stand up and defend Supergirl, who has basically passed out from the rays of the sun. Why they didn't cover up with her cape? At least it would have helped a little bit, or put her into a shade. But instead of on a platform, basically on display to the sun.
Yeah, we're gonna go on this plateau. That seems like a bad idea. There's a crevice there. Just squeeze her in there.
Yeah, just roll her off the side. At least give her a little shade. But
there's a big water thing in the middle, but it's surrounded by the, like, let's just go to the water.
Well, the water's the trap. Supergirl. You go to the water, and that's where all the dinosaurs are. But,
right, I know. It's brilliant.
It's such a different, you're right, it's such a different Tom King book. It's more like a road trip. They don't really... They're ostensibly looking for this guy who killed the girl's father, and they keep stumbling upon the aftermath of his actions. And he's the one that sent him to this planet. They caught up with him very, very briefly, and he used magic, because, you know, super characters are vulnerable to magic, to send them to this planet. So it's not really... We're not following, like, a giant story. There's not an intricate plot here. It's basically a road trip through this universe. And I know it's somewhat controversial, because of... This Supergirl's a harsh Western character. She curses a lot. She's kind of mean sometimes.
Well, what I was going to say is, like, if this was Supergirl, and I was going to ask you, is like, is this Supergirl? Because I don't think it is. I would read this character should be on the Justice League. Like, Superman, I'm serious. Like, Superman has to go away and do whatever. I would rather read this character, you know, than if she was on the Justice League and you know, has all Superman's power, but has a bit of a chip on her shoulder. It's so interesting. And it makes so much more sense than someone who's just trying to look up to her cousin and be the best that he can be.
She loves her cousin, but at one point she's like, God, he's an asshole sometimes.
Totally. You would totally think that if he was in your family. He's so fucking perfect. Who does he think he is?
And especially if you're, I don't know how old she's supposed to be, Supergirl. She's traditionally a teenager.
Well, she's 21.
That's true. She's right. She turned 21 in the story. So, but especially if you're that age, you know.
Yeah.
Your perfect cousin is like, sometimes it's going to grate on you. You love them,
well,
and they're
that too, and
you can idolize them, but occasionally it's just be like, ah, no one can measure up to you.
she's got the same branding, so like everyone expects her to as well.
Right.
Like that's going to make you kind of pissy. And she's not Kal-El, which is the thing about him, by the way. It's not the superpowers, it's the man. So why is she isn't that man. Anyway, I just it's great. I hope that this character survives. I didn't know there was controversy, but of course there's controversy.
Well, just a little bit, because she's not the traditional sort of like happy-go-lucky Supergirl version.
Good. We have enough of that.
I wanted to briefly mention Robin's number one from Tim Seeley and Valdemar Rivas. This was a book that was... DC did some silly, like... We want to publish a book. Vote on which one we should publish a while ago, and this was the winner. Which, of course, the team-up of all the Robins is going to win that competition. But and I think it may have come out in some other form before, but this is the first time it's sort of out widely to the general public. And I was very excited to read this, obviously. I read this last. This is a 6-issue miniseries. And
we were excited.
I intensely disliked it. I thought the art was bad. I hated the portrayal of some of the characters. They had Nightwing walking around in a man bun and a tank top, like totally incongruous to what he's got going on right now in his book. And then we're going to talk about Nightwing in 1 second, but I guess the new status quo for Tim Drake, now that he's bi, is to totally ignore the fact that he had a long-term relationship with Stephanie. That happens a bit here, and then we're going to talk about it Nightwing in a second, but it just irks me that this long-established DC couple, it's like they never even happened.
It's not even like they, you know, said he's gay. So you don't really even have to brush that under the rug. Interesting.
I mean, look, there's a couple of scenes here that got me. There's, you know, they're sitting around a table talking, and it's Dick, and it's Tim, and it's Jason, and it's Stephanie, and it's Damian. Again, out of continuity, Damian is off in Fight Club land or whatever in his own book. But, and then, you know, above them.
That
above
book's
them,
great, by the way.
Above them. Like, it's super fun. Like, ghost images of them as Robin, like that sort of stuff is designed to get me where I live, and that's fine, but just overall I didn't like the book. And the real thing that bothered me, which I'm going to read the second issue just to find out if this is true or not, but it seems like they are, the villain of the story is the original Robin who was kicked out by Batman, and I went no, you cannot fuck with that, you cannot retcon that. There was no Robin before Dick Grayson.
Really, that's what they're doing?
Yeah.
That's
seems
terrible.
Like
it. That's
so
terrible.
I was very, very upset after the end of this one. Nightwing, I just want to mention 86, Tom Taylor, Robert Rodriguez. This is the final tie-in to Fear.
Thank God.
Fear itself. Fear State. And Fear State.
Fear State. And that, and this is Fear itself, may as well. I mean, it's just as grating. Yeah. This
did you
is
read
why,
this?
Yeah, I did. This
the
is
overall
why Tom...
story's been dumb. However, I feel like in these tie-ins, there have been moments of Tom Taylor goodness. However, the thing that really bothered me in this issue, which was a little surprising, that's why I wonder if this is like a company mandate, is in the beginning, the clock tower blows up. They think Stephanie and Cassie were inside it, and so Dick and Barbara and Tim are outside, and they freak out watching it explode, and they're digging through the rubble for them. And Tim seems to be appropriately upset. So he yells at them to keep digging, and he makes sense because his long-term ex-girlfriend's in the rubble. And then when they find out she's actually alive, and they weren't actually in the clock tower, like, he's just sort of sitting there in the background, no reaction to the news. And then when they find the girls, they don't show, like, a big reunion with Stephanie. They show him hugging Cassie. And they don't even show him talking to Stephanie at all. At all.
Maybe it's awkward.
It's just weird. It's just so fucking weird, and I hate it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't... Let them be bi, fine, but you can't ignore the fact that they were together in the comics for, like, 20 years. Like, it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah. I have not hated these issues because, this has been a fun team of, like, sort of the sidekicks.
I mean, good Barbara Dick stuff all through.
Yeah.
So that's been the case. But I will, like, the stuff that he gets to do on his own doesn't get affected by this, and it's so much the stronger for it.
I like that Tim, as the younger brother, is constantly ribbing Dick and Barbara for being romantically involved now.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know what you guys find romantic. Or, you know. There was a bit of that in another book this week, was it Batman, where Barbara's setting up a new headquarters for Stephanie and her and Cassie because they're going to be in the Batgirls book, which I'm excited for. And she's like, I'm not going to go with you guys. You guys can take the keys. And I'm like, where are you going? Well, I'm going to go sleep and stay at Dick's house. And they were like, huh? So I like that whole fun, bit is fun. But
I want more Cass.
She's great. Well, always. I think you should read the Batgirls book when it comes out. It's going to be drawn by Jorge Corona from
Nice
from Middle West.
Yeah, good. That's all right.
There's a great shot in here page 11 with Cassie in the background. Mm-hmm. God, that suit is one of the best modern suits.
Yes.
100%. That Batgirl suit. I'm glad they went back to it. Just such a great suit. The full face mask. So anyway, it's over now. So if you've been avoiding these issues, you can go back to Nightwing. Even though I think you could have read these and been fine.
Yes, and I did. In just that way, and it was okay.
And also, this whole story is over now. Fear State's over, but it ended in Batman this week. Next month starts the Joshua Williamson era of Batman.
It'll be interesting.
And those are the books we wanted to talk about. There's a lot of books, but the patrons get their say at patreon.com/ifanboy, and they voted add a book to the rundown this week. The winner was another Comixology original. This is our second patron pick Comixology original. We Only Kill Each Other, number one. Stephanie Phillips, Peter Krause, Ellie Wright, and Troy Pateri. And you know what I really love about Stephanie Phillips, Josh?
I think I have an idea, but why don't you go with it and I'll tell you.
She seems to really want to write the books that you and I want to read.
That's pretty much what I was going to say.
I mean, she wrote a superhero book this week that I can't even think of what it was. I didn't really love it, but I really like her non-superhero stuff. She writes a pirate book. She wrote a serial killer murder mystery book. She's writing this mob story. In World War II. I mean, like, she seems to be super into these comics that you, me, and five other people want to read.
Well, and I say that's what's interesting about that is that, listen, I'm not gonna ignore it. This is not a thing that female comic writers are typically associated with, and I think that it's very interesting. I think this is the first, woman who's sort of done so many of these type of real life genre stuff. Like, and it's not. It has nothing to do with genderness. I mean, the pirate book's about women, but it's not that. But it's not like you're like, oh, this is written by a woman as a thing, which isn't a good or a bad thing. But like, they're just stories. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The point is, but it doesn't happen much. It's unusual. Like, it's just not a thing that happens. But it's gotten to the point now where she's done enough of them that I see the name. And you're right. Like, the work for hire stuff is work. She's probably, that's how you make a living. You do whatever. And it's fine, but it isn't. But this kind of thing, her, creator-owned original stuff,
yep,
is all good and interesting. And you're right, it's the kind of books that you and I, it's sort of like Brian Wood's side stuff.
Yes, yep.
Reminds me of that. And it's good. It's not even just like, oh, this is a good concept. No. We Only Kill Each Other, number one. I had no idea what it was. And I read it, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. Like,
the cover's a bunch of mobsters, and there's a photograph of Hitler on fire. And I was like, let's do this.
It takes place in 1938, so it's, the run-up to World War II. It's happening in Europe. We are, still in the Depression in the U.S., the rise of organized crime and Murder, Inc. and The Outfit.
At this point, you've had Prohibition has over, but it's – or is it almost over? Is it over the next year?
It's over.
It's over now.
It's 32.
So the gangs have risen from Prohibition, so this is all about a Jewish mob. In New York, and the only knock on this is we just don't know exactly what's happening. Like, a lot of these first issues are, we meet a lot of characters, we get the setting and the time and place, which has been great. We just don't know exactly what the story is.
I mean, like, for me, it helps because I know the context. Like, sure. I know where they are. I understand that they're all connected to each other and going to be. I thought. By the way, if you haven't, there is a book, and I cannot remember the author right now. I'm sorry, off the top of my head. It's a book called Tough Jews.
Yeah, it's a good
one.
And
it is about the rise of the Jewish organized crime system in the 20s and 30s. Arnold Rothstein, Meyer Lansky. It is a wonderful bit of history that is so integral to the mafia story that most people don't know about. Anyway, so
Rich Cohen
knowing that.
Wrote it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we both read that a while ago.
A Jewish man. It's a wonderful book, and I am always seeing stuff in pop culture that makes me think, I'm glad I knew these things. And this is another one of those, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name, but there's a Jewish gangster, and he's trying to observe the Sabbath, but he's a bloodthirsty, ruthless killer at the same time, which is really interesting. And he's going after this other guy who's the tough guy who throws somebody through a plate glass window a la Daredevil at the beginning, and... He thinks he just wants to kill that guy. And then they meet up at the end, and what you expect to happen is not what happens. And then another thing happens that you didn't expect to happen, and that's the end of the issue. And, all of those characters, the setting, the time, and then the structure and plotting were all interesting.
Oh, then there's the Bund.
Yeah, the Bund. And the Bund is fascinating, by the way. We don't talk about it, you know, too much in terms when we tell our World War II story. We do not talk about the fact that there was a large, large contingent of Americans, specifically German Americans. This was in the plot against America, the HBO series. But there's a large contingent, you know, who were pro Hitler, which was not unusual at that time. You know, like through the 30s, a lot of people were like, well, you know, Germany's pretty great over there right now, because we were not a tolerant nation at the time. We weren't like, no, we like Jews. We're fine. But that was not the thing.
No.
It's all interesting history. It's just and there's no zombies or aliens or magic. And it's just so beautiful.
And Peter Krause, someone we've loved since we first saw him on Irredeemable a long time ago with Mark Waid. And he has shown up here and there. He doesn't work a ton in comics. He also works in advertising.
Yeah.
But he did a great World War II Archie series last year, the year before, whenever time had meaning. Archie 1945 or 55. They did 50. I don't know if he did 55. He definitely did 45. He does terrific character and storytelling stuff. He's great.
I ended up meeting him in San Diego at some point, and we were pretty friendly. And I really like him a lot, like just as a dude. But I read this and I just thought, this is fantastic. Like, this is like, he does great work, but I was like, this is a step up. Like, he's, I don't know, the right man at the right time or whatever, mm-hmm. but it was exactly what it needed to be. You know, this is the challenge of, we're talking about humans. There's no costumes. There's no, you have to make everybody look different. You have to, you know, and he did that through posture and face and outfit. You know, so you can tell who the people you're talking about. The Jewish gangster has a very clear suit, you know, double-breasted sort of pinstripe thing, and the, you know, the main guy is, you know, he's rumpled, and you can sort of point him out. And I just thought I was perfect. It was really, really well drawn.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see where this goes. This is a 6-issue mini.
And if you're this is the Kindle Prime, whatever.
Yeah,
if you're a Prime member, it's free. If you're a Prime member, you go and you order it, quote unquote, from Amazon, and it shows up on a Kindle reader, and you read it just like a comic book on a tablet, or I'm sure you can read it on a browser or something like that. But it looks like Clear, the Snyder Manipul series, which is also there. The second issue of that came out, and it was also still free for Prime. So it might be that these, this is.
I think they all might be free all the way through.
Which makes sense, because if they're paying for them, it's a lot cheaper than a TV show. Then I get those for free on Prime,
right.
Which is pretty awesome. Like, you know, you could just read this. You don't even have to pay. You know?
So if you're an Amazon Prime customer, they're not sponsoring the show, but we're both Prime customers. No. If you are, there's like almost no excuse not to check out We Only Kill Each Other and Clear, both terrific series. But let's rate We Only Kill Each Other number one from Comixology Originals on a scale of 1 to 5.
This is hard because ratings. I want to give it a higher score than I think it deserves, mm-hmm. in a way. I think I want to say like a 4 craft-wise, but a 5 for joy. Like, I think this actually would have been my pick of the week.
Right.
For sure. I'm going to go with 4.25. I'm going to temper, you know, my subjective excitement with my objective reality.
Well, according to her bio in the back, Stephanie Phillips has a PhD, so we should be calling her Dr. Phillips.
I made a strong attempt to get her on the show, and it didn't work out. And after I read this, I was like, I have got to get that back, because I really want to talk to her.
I'm going to give this a 4 as well. I'm looking forward to more. Sticking with it, yes, we both are.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there you go. There's a Patreon pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. It's where you can vote and add a book to the rundown. But real quick, we're going to talk about who our favorites, Josh Mack Weldon.
Oh.
You're a busy guy. I'm a busy guy. We're all busy guys. So stop thinking about what you're going to wear and just embrace the radically efficient Mack Weldon Daily Wear System. The Daily Wear System is a selection of clothes rooted in smart design, made with performance fabrics, and built to work together. From breathable t-shirts and polos to stylish button-ups and shorts, underwear, and beyond, Mack Weldon makes it easy for you to dress for work, leisure, and play, or wherever your life takes you. You know, it's getting chilly now in LA, and I've worn my Mack Weldon Radius pants every day this week.
Really?
Yeah.
They're quite flexible.
You know, we talked about them before. The Ace sweatpants are really comfortable and kind of stylish for sweatpants, at least for what you think about sweatpants are. But the Radius pants, which you have, I believe, also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are, you know, they're nice sort of, what are they made out of?
It's like, I mean, it's probably some kind of polyester kind of thing, but they're sort of windproof and vaguely water resistant, but they're flexible.
They're comfortable. They have elastic waistbands for all the COVID related needs. And what's great about them is you can, like what I did yesterday, throw on a sweatshirt and some shoes, run out to the pharmacy and get your booster shot, and never have to change pants because they work. They're indoor outdoor pants. They're public facing and private facing pants. They're great. They're comfortable.
They call this a technical fabric, which I think is the correct thing. Weather resistant, right. Probably wicks moisture or something to that effect. You know,
great pants. I'm not wearing them right now because I decided to launder them because I wore them five days in a row.
That's a lot. So they're holding up though, is what you're saying.
Yeah, they're
great. That's what I'm hearing.
I love them. Nice. I was so excited for the weather to change so I could pull my Ace pants and my Radius pants out of the closet and onto my body. I'm able to focus on the things that matter most to me because of the time I save, not have to worry about my clothes. I've got them all set for me because of Mack Weldon. All the clothes are designed to work together for the ultimate lazy Sunday. Their Ace sweatpants have modern tailoring and pair perfectly with the ultra soft, ultra upgraded Pima tees. For travel weekends, both far and near, the silver knit polo and Radius pants are the perfect high tech, highly packable combo. So if you have been listening to this talk about Mack Weldon for years and you haven't taken the plunge, for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboy, enter promo code iFanboy. That's MackWeldon.com/iFanboy, promo code iFanboy for 20% off. Mack Weldon, radically efficient wardrobing.
I have been right on the edge of ordering an Ace pullover hooded sweatshirt for some time. Every time I go to the website, there's like other stuff there, but I know what the sweatpants are like, and I'm like, that sweatshirt's going to be perfect. And it's going to happen soon. Insanely soft, micro-brushed French terry. Come on.
Ooh, those are all good words.
Those are all good words.
I like
French.
All those words.
Micro-brushed. Oui, oui. C'est très bien.
C'est magnifique. Hey, patron pick powers time. If you're a patron who gives the $5 higher level, you get your superpower live on the show. We thank everyone who does so and supports the show, and we reward them thusly. Josh, kick it off.
Bishop DeQuain.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
Or I could say it American. I could say DeQuain. Bishop DeQuain. Actually, there's a E at the end of it, so I should pronounce the N. I don't know. I'm out of practice. Mm-hmm. Can banish any and all remakes from existence.
Oh, shit.
So if a remake of something comes out, And he I assume he disapproves the bishop, as it were.
The bishop
can just erase it from existence. So it turns out there never was a Gus Van Sant Psycho movie with Vince Vaughn in it. It just didn't happen.
Never happened. No one remembers.
There were no. I mean, honestly, he could banish half the TV shows on streaming.
There would be nothing left to show on streaming. People would go to streaming and be like, "What? Where's all the shows?"
And no one would miss it. No one at all. You might have thought you liked the One Day at a Time show, but you didn't. It doesn't matter. It's gone. But if he touches Fargo, he'll be up against a wall.
Oh,
that's
snap.
What I'm saying. Yeah. Well, not the last season.
No, that was not a good season. Darren Jackson. So, Josh, when Darren Jackson takes off his shirt, he may look like a normal man to you and me. Right?
Well, look at that guy. He's got no shirt on, but other than that,
looks pretty normal.
He's normal.
He then activates his power. And his stomach turns into an oven. An oven door appears on his chest, stomach chair area. He opens up that oven, and infinite croissants come out.
So inside, it's like a Doctor Who telephone booth kind of thing.
I guess, whatever that means. But he just, every time he opens his stomach oven, there are croissants in there.
Delicious fresh croissants? Or
beautiful,
just any kind of
delicious
croissant?
Fresh croissants.
This is a very francophile segment
croissant.
We're in here. Le croissant,
c'est magnifique. I'm hungry now. So,
and somebody tried to remake Godard's Breathless, and he was like, "No,
no,
and
shit."
And he's eating. They should team up.
They should team up.
They should team up.
So what they should do is Bishop DeQuain erases the remake, and then he takes the guy whose idea it was to remake it and slams his head into Darren Jackson's oven, like in Goodfellas.
Oh my God, that's not where I was going at all.
And then they just beat him with the oven door.
See, what I was thinking is that he would go to the place where, like, he would go to, like, Netflix HQ, right?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, I'm very sorry. Désolé. Mais no more remakes. And they small. And then they're like, but, and they didn't remember it happened. But when they wake up, piles of fresh croissants. So well, they don't even know. Like, they're like, I don't know, everything seems okay. And they're like, I feel better about my soul.
Like, how bad could life be if you've got piles of fresh croissants?
Like, they don't even know what happened. It's a, right. It's an absolute good, is what it is.
So there you go, patreon.com/iFanboy. You can give her the $5 high level and get your own superpower live in the show. And we know...
Can you believe we never got an Eisner nomination? we do something like we just did there, and no one even cares.
I just wanted to say, if you're still waiting for your power, the list is long. We're getting through it as fast as we can. Just hold tight. Hold steady. Be patient.
I mean, that's not entirely true. We're only doing two at a time now.
Well, we're trying to... Yeah, well... Four was I mean,
we could
the show
do it faster, but we don't want to run out because we really like doing this. And the day that there are none left, it will be a sad day.
Let's do an email, or you want to skip the email?
I don't even know where we're at in time.
We're almost at an hour.
All right, do it. Do it.
Paul P. from Vancouver, Canada. Marvel has long distinguished itself from DC by having a more cohesive universe continuity, unless a book is specifically labeled otherwise, for example, What If or the Ultimate Lines. However, lately, it seems like they have more titles edging into Elseworlds territory and not necessarily tied to the main universe, but also not labeled What If or something else that would indicate this. Two recent examples, Dark Ages, which seems to be completely its own event isolated in time and space, and The Thing. If you don't believe me about this one, look closer to see the cell phones being used in the 1980s, Do you think this is intentional, or is Marvel just not caring as much about keeping things cohesive since DC has obviously given up on that and still been successful with great standalone stories that have nothing to do with the main universe? Are the Marvel editors and powers that be merely being sloppy, or could they perhaps be slyly opening more windows into another multiverse for whatever the hell they have planned in the movies coming up? Curious on your thoughts? Well, they're not like sloppily putting out books like, oh shit, who greenlit this out-of-continuity book? Whoops.
I mean... I think my understanding is that it's not as important to them as it used to be to us. And story seems to have more sway than continuity, which is probably ultimately a good thing.
We've been advocating for that for years.
I think the sands, the bedrock that sort of older folks especially who have been around in comics for a long time are slipping and changing. And like, we can appreciate it, but we can still be annoyed by it at the same time. But, you know, if you think about it, you know, the folks who are editing comics now, the folks, you know, the frontline editors and assistant editors, mm-hmm. they didn't grow up in the same climate that we did. It's a different thing now. And even the creators are, you know, for a while, they're pretty much our peers, but now they're probably, you know, 10 years younger than us or something like that. And it's just a different expectation of things.
And it's not like Marvel's never done this before. You know, they've done like Neil Gaiman's miniseries. What was that called?
The 1685, something like 16. It was a year in the 1600s.
And then there was the other one, similarly numbered 1870, whatever, with the Marvel heroes in the Old West. Like, it's not unknown to do this. It's just they don't do it as much. So it's not like it's a new thing for them. And also, I would say The Thing. That's just retro modern storytelling. That's pervading everything, you know.
Yes,
and that's the thing was very firmly in continuity. It's just that, you know, it's the same thing as when Bendis did the original X-Men coming into modern continuity. It's like they didn't show up from 1963; they showed up from sometime in the past with cell phones and things. So you just have to constantly slide the scale forward. So it may have had the characters and the feeling of the storytelling of the 80s, but doesn't take place in the 80s because that would make Thing, you know, 95 years old. They have to slide the scale forward.
One thing that's nice about Captain America is that he, because of the time travel element of it, mm-hmm. he gets to always be a World War II veteran. But right. Frank Castle may have had to fight in the Gulf.
Well, now he's in that fake Asian country war that they remember based on that
right.
history of Marvel. I don't want to go off into a tangent about Captain America, but it was interesting if you think about it.
You just Dennis Millard. I don't want to go off on a tangent here. Or maybe go on a rant, babe.
You know, in the comics, when he came back in 1960, you know, three or whatever, it was only 20 years after the war. So it was a much different experience for him.
18 years.
Than then coming back in the 2000s, you know, the scene in the film where he shows up in Times Square is how it is, and he's in the future. It's a much more jarring experience than coming back at a time where all your war buddies are only in their 40s, and, you know,
I know, he could have still dated Peggy. I mean, it would have been weird then. You could get away with it now, for example.
Sure.
But a little May-December action? Nothing wrong with that.
So that totally changes the character and the whole thing by sliding it forward, but that's just interesting to me. That's a sidebar. But yeah, I mean, they're just doing what they're doing the best they can. They're not, no one's being sloppy. These are all decisions that are made by lots of people and committee. It's not an accident that they're publishing these books. And
they're,
I don't necessarily,
doing the best they can.
And I don't know that they are teeing up movie stuff, although I guess it's possible, but I know that the publishing side has much more sway in the movies than people realize, but I don't know that that's the case. Although it could be, I guess, but it's just more that they're just trying to tell stories that people are interested in. And if that means telling out of continuity stories, look, like, you know, Marvel has a multiverse. Marvel has always had a multiverse. DC gets all the press, but, you know, that's what Marvel 616 means. 616 is the number of the Earth. They have numbered Earths just like DC. They've always had a multiverse. Mm-hmm. So, it to me, it's no different than anything that Marvel's ever done.
But yeah, no, I agree. And it's a great thing about comic books. It's a great thing about comic books. And I think when you talk about
Earth X, like, these are all things that Marvel published that are all out of continuity stories.
I think when you talk about Marvel doing stuff for movies or vice versa, it's smart for them to do that. Like, it's smart for publishing to come up with things that they can use for movies. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to wreck the comics. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good. But also, if you think about the way that the problems that they are having with their actors mm-hmm. aging out of a part, and, you know, the reality of time on that stuff, like, Elseworld stuff seems to be the answer.
Right.
But it's interesting, though, is that they've already trained everybody to watch the movies to think of one continuity and one timeline, and now they've got to switch it the other way around in order to keep it sort of realistically feasible. Otherwise, it's going to be doing face melt technology on everybody.
Oh, no. When
old
do I
men
get that
running
technology?
Around trying to look young. You're De Niro, Sam Jackson, like...
I had a moment in the mirror the other day where I was like, what the fuck happened? Just like for a moment.
Thought about contacting our sponsor?
Like, no, like, they can't. Are they plastic surgeons too? I was like, how did this happen?
No. Well, sometimes that can lead to depression. That's certainly an issue I have. How did this happen? Wait, I've got how long left?
How did I allow this to happen? Anyway, I Paul, it's a great question. It's just I don't think that Marvel's doing anything different than they've ever done.
Yeah.
They've always done out of continuity stuff.
Yeah.
And multiverse stuff. Just not as much as DC.
They should.
Yeah.
I'm glad they do it.
Yeah. Contact.fanboy.com is where Paul P. from Vancouver, Canada. I don't know what accent it is, but it's not Canadian.
That's definitely not. Connor doesn't really do accents.
Canada. Vancouver, Canada. he wrote in at contact.fanboy.com.
Like, here in this hour of our fight, they will go to Vancouver, Canada.
Mid-Atlantic. So you can write in there to get in the show. You can write in for the Media Explode. If it's for Media Explode, please put Media Explode in the title. And we'll warn you again, but what we normally do at the end of the year, as coming at the end of the year, is we put all the emails we didn't answer in a folder and start the year fresh and new. So if you're someone who wrote in over the course of this year and didn't get your email answered, you might have to send it in again, because once January comes around, we will be starting fresh. So FYI. And hey, let's plug things since it is the end of the year. Let's talk about the end of the year schedule. Right now, out in the feed behind these shows that we do every week, you can find Josh's Tom King interview, his Talksplode interview. That's still there. We're going to talk about it. And still, because it's a good one, and you should listen to it. Also, our special edition review of Injustice, the animated series, the Tom Taylor written adaptation of a video game, now adapted into a cartoon. And then our Media Explode just came out this past week. Our final Media Explode of the year, me and Josh and Ron talked about what we've been enjoying in media. We talked about holiday media traditions, and we spent a lot of time talking about movies, and we answered some emails. But one of them we ended up spending about 20 minutes on talking about our favorite eras of movies and things like that.
What a great question that was. This is a
great question, great discussion. So check that out. The Media Explode's right behind the show on the feed. Like I said last week, we're going to have two shows at least 2 shows a week for the rest of the year. So coming up this week, right before the holidays, right before Thanksgiving, you're going to get the, you're definitely going to get the Eternals review. That's definitely happening. It's already in this, already uploaded in the system. You're probably also going to get the Shang-Chi review as well. I haven't uploaded that one yet. I haven't even started the edit on that one, but hopefully you're going to get both those right before the holidays. You can listen to them while you're cooking. You know, instead of fighting about politics, fight about Marvel movies. Put those on the stereo.
I recommend downloading the both and then saving them and then listening to them in the specific order, just in case. Like, for example, if you really liked one of the movies but didn't like the other, you should listen to them in your preferred order there. I'm not giving anything away, but, you know. Or if you listen to one of them and you're like, that was awful, I hate that review they gave. But then listen to the other one, and maybe you'll even out.
So Shang-Chi and the Eternals comes out this week. After that, Pickley 808. And then after the week after that, our Avengers Forever Booksplode will come out, which I'm very excited to talk about. And then a week after that is Pickley 809. That comes out on 12/5. And then a few days after that, our Booksplode on the death of Captain Marvel, a final Booksplode of the year on December 9th. And then after that is the final pick of the week of the year, Pickley 810 on December 12th. And then, but we have 2 more shows. Josh hopefully has a Talksplode that comes out a few days later, which is already lined up but not done yet. And then our final show of the year, as always, is our all-media year and roundup that comes up on December 18th. And then we take a couple weeks off and come back to you fresh and new with Pickle Week 811 on January 9th. So that's the rest of the year. We look forward to all those shows. And we look forward to the break because it's a lot of shows to do in 4 weeks.
It is. It's a lot of shows. It's going to be a thing. Hey, go to ifanboy.com. Find this stuff. You can find all the shows that we have done about everything. If you search Booksplode, you can find a ton of books on that, or shows on that. If you search Talksplode, you can find a ton of stuff on that.
Well, yeah, you got episode 100 next year.
Yeah, somebody January. Mentioned that, and I was like, oh, that feels like pressure.
Talksplode 100.
Yeah, Rick Remender. There you go. he's like 10% of them. You can follow us facebook.com/ifanboy for now. Ifanboy at ifanboy on Twitter, at ifanboy comics on Instagram. Connor and I are both on Instagram. CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan. Our page over at YouTube is youtube.com/, you guessed it, ifanboy. And you can, the old video shows are getting re-uploaded. The regular shows will be done soon, but there's plenty of minis to go around for a long time. And so, for example, this week you would find Mega City Undercover Mini. That sounds like a Ron thing that has something to do with Judge Dredd.
Yep.
Which I don't think he's as big of a fan of as he wants to think he is. he never brings up Dredd. He's like, oh man, that's like that Carlos Esquerra story. No, you don't do that. This is a great documentary on 2000 AD. It was on Amazon Prime when I last watched it, by the way. And everybody should read it or watch it who listens to this show.
Remembering.
Yes, that too. There's Remembering Frank Frazetta and Dick Giordano. Was that a mini? No.
No, that was a full length show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They died really legends. Close to together to each
yeah.
other.
That's a good show. And then there's A Vault, which is when we sort of each did a different book that we have. There's Queen and Country, the definitive edition, volume 4. That's funny. It was a good volume, though. That was the side series. It wasn't about Terra. It was about Paul Crocker, I think.
Yeah.
Then there's Terra, T-E-R-R-A, and Point Blank. Point Blank is Brubaker and Phillips.
Yep.
I don't know what Terra is. Yeah. It's like, yeah. It's not the prequel because it came out first.
Yeah, it was the lead-in. It was the one that just got overshadowed because no one at the time bought it. But
yeah.
Point Blank was the lead-in to Sleeper. Terra was the spinoff of Power Girl that Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti did. It was a solid...
Right.
Grouping of books.
Yeah, those are good books. See, I think it says something that us two men who can't remember anything are like, oh yeah, those were good books. So that means they stick with you a little bit.
And that's so if you like the show, please consider leaving us a review or a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. Not just for us, any podcast you listen to, it really does help them if you leave them a review or even just click a star rating. It helps people find the show, helps the algorithm, helps everything. Even better, that's word of mouth when people ask about podcasts. Again, if you're in America... and you're getting ready to head over to your family's celebration next week, feel free to talk about iFanboy the entire time. At least no one then will talk about vaccines.
Especially if, and I cannot stress this enough, your uncle, you don't see him a lot. He's aloof, but he's stinking filthy rich. And he just sits in the back and he complains about, you know, whatever. Just berate him with our name. And don't forget, nonprofit status, we can get there.
iFanboy.com/support. Just keep telling him about that. Especially if he's had a few. Call it up on his phone.
Yeah,
just have him
I mean,
press
like,
the button.
I assume there's a physical wallet somewhere. And listen, we do not condone theft,
no,
or illegal wire transfer, or any of those felony type things.
Whatever you do and your uncle do is your business.
Get a signature. Get something. You know, video. Like, get some kind of solid proof before any kind of transaction takes place. But you know, it's the least you can do for us.
This is dicey ground.
Can I just say that I have built a cart at MacWeldon.com where we're here, and there's some significant yearly sales going on at the moment.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. MacWeldon.com/iFanboy.
Yeah.
Hey, the show's over. That was fun. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. We clearly don't want it to be over.